Discover a better approach to studying business at Saybrook University. Our Sustainable Social Impact MBA is designed for students passionate about achieving the quadruple bottom line: people, planet, and profit guided by purpose. Train with scholar practitioners who have experience in multiple innovative fields, explore people-centered approaches for organizations, and bridge your education to your career. Find out more about our MBA program and how you can earn your degree in as little as 12 months at saybrook.edu. Hey everyone, welcome back to the 50th anniversary season of the Saybrook Insights Podcast, a proud production of Saybrook University. We're an online, nonprofit, regionally accredited institution of higher learning located right here in beautiful Pasadena, California. Today, Saybrook Mind-Body Medicine alumnus Ms. Isabel Nieto Alvarez joins me to discuss her work at Siemens as a senior key expert health engineer, her time at Saybrook University, and thoughts she has as to how we can innovate healthcare to make it more accessible and effective, which we need more of those ideas for sure. She brings a unique international perspective, given her work and upbringing, with interesting ideas as to how we can begin reimagining integrative care for the 21st century. To learn more about Saybrook University, visit us online at saybrook.edu. And now, Ms. Isabel Nieto Alvarez. Enjoy. Welcome back to Saybrook Insights Podcast. I am really pleased to be joined by Isabel Nieto Alvarez, who is a Saybrook alumna. Unfortunately, our co-host Carmen Bowen could not join us today, but she gave you, Isabel, her well wishes. Isabel, welcome to our podcast today. Great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
It's so terrific. I know we connected on LinkedIn some time back, and you even rose to the occasion when I was asking if there'd be interest in this. You said, absolutely, and always love a willing volunteer. So once again, your participation here today is just really welcomed and appreciated. Maybe tell the audience about your background, who you are. Give us a sense of the Isabel that we want to come to know and love over the next few minutes here today.
Wow, I hope I rise to the occasion. Well, I can start off saying, like, what do I do? I am currently senior key expert of patient experience in Siemens Healthineers. And that's just to say, like, where I am right now. That means I work with innovation. I work also with looking at what can we do to change what we're like the industry and in general healthcare. That's basically in a short nutshell what I am doing, let's say, in work-wise. But I'm also passionate about dancing, about nature, about painting. I love to paint as well. Wow. And that just to give a little bit of a... a comprehensive or a bit more comprehensive view into me.
Well, before we just hop into the what do you do part, because a lot of what you do is connected to what we're going to talk about today. But as a former musician, classical musician, I also have a lot of love for the fine arts. You mentioned dancing, you mentioned painting. How did you get into all of that? That's terrific.
I mean, I don't know. I guess I just started from as a kid, and I've continued to love that, and it's a passion of mine. And I love dancing, and I've danced like from ballet all the way to salsa. I think my master's thesis was actually on salsa Rueda Casino, which is a particular way of dancing in a group. Yes. And then moved on now to learning souk, which is another way of expression, really moving other parts of the body. I didn't know that one can move.
And what is it called? Souk?
Souk, yeah.
How do you spell it?
Z-O-U-K.
Okay, got it. Okay. That, I have never heard that. All right, I'll have to take a look on the interwebs to see what that's all about. Yeah. Terrific. And what kind of painting are you into?
I mean, painting, usually I do oil painting, and I like to now at least use it also for visions and visions in the sense of where I want to go, what do I see, what do I observe in the world, and I can just bring it there. Or when I go and travel, which I love as well, then I just make a little watercolor of where I am. little impression to remember. So trigger my brain differently.
So our audience can't see, but in the back, are those two of your paintings?
Yeah, it's a triptych. So it starts with a world and then it continues to have this connection towards the light and towards, this oneness, let's say, and uniting like our nervous system, ourselves with nature and society in general. So, yeah.
It is beautiful. I love it. All right. We get a little insight into your artistic psyche there. I love it. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we connected. I know your background is with, generally healthcare right now in the Health and Ears program at Siemens, correct? Or the Health and Ears area. Maybe tell us a little bit about Siemens in general and what that's all about, the Health and Ears, and how you came to be associated with that. And then we'll get into the biomedical engineering and mind-body connection here in just a moment.
Glad to, yeah. So Siemens Health and Ears is a company dedicated to manufacturing medical equipment for diagnosis and also for treatment purposes or follow-up. So manufacturing MRIs or CTs or X-ray systems and also laboratory systems. And among that, there's also like services and looking towards value partnerships, innovation. So it's in this area where Siemens Health and Ears is, let's say, leading.
Very, very interesting. And you found yourself coming to Siemens as a result of what? How did you find yourself in this, you know, space, if you will?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm a biomedical engineer, so my background is machines, basically, in healthcare. And I came to Siemens because I was looking for a leader in bringing green hospitals. So hospitals which were aware of their environment and which were aware of how are they set up, that they are also looking into the community. And Siemens was the only company back then that had such a program. So I came asking in Mexico City if there was something to do around that, because I was interested in healthcare without harm, let's say. And I started there working from as a working student, actually. So, yeah.
So an internship type of experience.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And then, so while you started there, we had the privilege and honor of having you come to Saybrook to study your master's degree in mind-body medicine. And I was trying to piece all this together. And in our email correspondence, you sent this great question for consideration, which I think was perfect, because I'm like, I need to know the answer to that, because that's what I've been pondering. How are you tying biomedical engineering and mind-body medicine? Where did those things come together? So would love to hear more about that.
Yeah. Well, actually, I moved in Siemens specially to be MRI specialist, magnetic resonance image. And that's, I think the brain is just amazing, right? It's an organ which we don't know really as much as the depth of it, and our whole nervous system in general. And that being like the second point of really looking at how does our brain function, how much does environment play a role in our brain, how much does actually our own emotions, like all this, this even alternative medicine, how can that trigger certain, why do we react positively to alternative medicine sometimes, or this placebo effect, like how does that come together? And that led me to think, okay, I want to study more about this, like integrative medicine, but in a scientific way. And I started looking it up in the internet and seeing where can I learn this? And I came to Saybrook, and that's where, both paths kind of met.
You found us through the internet, and you found us in terms of looking for a more scientific approach to understanding integrative techniques. What did you find during your master's degree with this?
What did I find? I mean, I found so much more than what I expected. It was pretty impressive because I was really looking forward to something practical. I do like doing research. I love research, but I like that I can then do it also practical. And what was really surprising is that I got to experience myself all these mind and body practices. Like I was my first subject of study, let's say. And that's really cool.
That's very cool. So what did you find was most effective, most interesting in terms of some of those techniques that you learned while you were at Saybrook? And have you carried any of those forward with you today?
I think many of them, definitely. Meditation, breathing, like just being mindful of the breath is definitely one of them. But then also realizing that my dance is actually part of my health program, let's say. And that painting, as I, much as I loved it back then, now I see it even therapeutic, even. So there are many elements which I realized were very important already and I had integrated. So that came along as well with the food, for example. How much food influences our whole, how we think, how we react, like how much food also changes our mood. Mm-hmm. I think that was also one of the points I really, really took in. And the best part was really seeing how much all the alternative or complementary medicine has the potential to be integrated into our traditional medicine, right? I mean, that was, I think, one of the critical points. And especially how technology could be then a way, like how that's where kind of like the intersection came together.
So what does that look like in your mind right now, and where can it go? Like, what are some of the opportunities for that healthcare technology and integrated practices? We see some of it in apps, right? Like meditation apps and mindful eating apps, those types of things. Where are you seeing the opportunities now and into the future, especially in your position? Yeah.
Yeah. So my first and most important point is that once you see an image or a diagnosis of your body, it's an awareness point, right? One can feel sometimes something, but in many cases, many of the diseases, we are not able to, we are not yet so advanced to detect them without seeing them in an image or in a result or in a number or a blood test or, and this point is a very critical point, let's say, to trigger awareness and to trigger also a change in behavior. And to understand also what's happening within our bodies that we get to that point, let's say. So that's where technology helps, because I see technology, especially diagnostic technology, to be a tool for us to be much more aware of our bodies and what we do to it.
We tend to do a lot of bad things to our bodies. So.
We do, right?
Yeah, and we will get into all of them, but yeah, for sure. So like, give me an example, like where could that be realized in a very, you know, practical way? If you were, you know, you're talking to a lot of folks out there who may not have a mind-body background or an integrative health or a medical background, where have you seen this, or where do you think this could be most effective? A tangible example.
So I would take cancer, right? I mean, cancer is a big word. Tumors may be visible, maybe even you can maybe even feel them. But in many cases, they can also be a silent killer, like, for example, in the liver, right? And being able to have a scan of an image where you can see actually the size of the tumor can then be a, let's say, the wake-up call that someone has not had before, right? And also, I think it's then a tool, this image can also be a tool to show for follow-up. So once a patient goes into treatment, it's also a place where one can go back to these images to see, oh, I have improved, or even to set the mindset for a positive a reaction from the treatment tool, right? To say, oh, I want to trigger my mind that I will reduce this circle that I see here to a smaller size, let's say, with the treatment that I'm getting as well. So setting the mind up for also this support of the treatment path, let's say.
So something along the lines of if you have your phone, I'm holding up my phone here, how would that translate to the handheld technology that someone has today, potentially for the future?
I mean, I'm generally, when you ask me these questions, I'm thinking of the big machines for a diagnosis. But of course, there are other machines that are smaller and that are handheld. I mean, if a patient who is in a remote space or a remote area, and they could actually just diagnose their blood sugar through the phone, or even, you know, check if their stress levels are so high due to their heart rate variability, to their pupils, to the whole setup, then that they can also act on that. I think, of course, that would be, that's kind of like the other side of the spectrum, right? And actually, one of the other areas in which I have much interest is this affect and emotion. Like, how do we use emotion and in relation to care, to healthcare, and how can we detect that? Or how can we use it in our favor, let's say? And that's where wearables also come into the game, right? Because to know how you're feeling, what's the stress levels, the wearables is, or the a phone can easily be a very important tool for that.
It's an immediate biofeedback technique that you can apply for yourself. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So with respect to your work at Siemens around health and ears, I would imagine there's a lot of visioning opportunities that you have with your colleagues and with people all around the world, I could imagine. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but and I bet you've created or thought about your own vision for healthcare and kind of what are the barriers and what are some of the opportunities. Maybe talk to our audience, given your robust professional background and the work you're doing, what is your vision for healthcare in the future? And talk a little bit about those barriers and opportunities that exist for us.
Cool. Well, let me break the question into two.
Yeah.
So the first part is the Siemens Health and Ears part, in which I can answer to, and the other one is the Isabel side of it, let's say, right? So within Siemens Health and Ears, we do have a commitment for precision medicine, for transforming care delivery, and important enough to improve the patient experience, right? That's where I am active, let's say, and most, let's say, doing the visioning with my colleagues and with different experts to really say, how can we improve this experience of care that involves this emotion, fear, stress, anxiety, to really change it also? And how can we change that for the future too, right? And all these using digitalization as well. So that is, let's say, in that area. And we do see change for the future in that sense. Now, for Isabel, right? And that's where I move a bit into my own vision, is that we have in the future this awareness of the connection between our minds and our thought generating organs, let's say, or organs generating thoughts, how you want to put it, and then connection with the body, the physical body, and then also with the emotions, right? And how does that play a role in our health in general? And how does that also, is a tool that we can use for our benefit, let's say? Yeah. And I think one of the most important parts, which I also have in my vision or in this vision, is that it needs to start from the core. That meaning that people who provide care, so healthcare professionals, are the first ones we really need to support, so that they have this integration of mindfulness, of this connection in their own lives and in their own selves. And then that when they provide care to the ones receiving care, let's say, then it is also like there is a balance in that.
How do we get traditional Western medical care providers, doctors, nurses, other allied health practitioners to adopt those more integrative techniques? I think it's starting to happen in pockets, but I think, you know, as there are days when I come into this and I go, oh, it's starting to really catch wind, and things are really starting to happen. And then you turn around and you see a whole slew of docs or whomever saying, oh, it's a bunch of bunk, right? This doesn't make sense. And this isn't, evidence-based, and there's all sorts of issues with it. And yet we know that the science is starting to catch up with some of these integrative techniques. And I think to your earlier point, ideally the science will guide our use of these techniques, and not all of them are going to be viable, right? We know that some of those integrative techniques are not going to be useful in terms of clinical outcomes. And yet, to your point, very easy to do things like meditation and mindfulness can be very beneficial in healthcare outcomes, and can be modeled effectively by healthcare providers. So what are your thoughts around getting individuals in the healthcare systems, whatever country we're in, to start adopting these practices? And what are you seeing right now on the ground?
I would say definitely we need to have two sides. One is the science to it and doing the research and the measurement, the actual measuring it, right? This scientific way in which we can also, publish, measure, share that knowledge. And the other side to it is also self-experience. I mean, one of the big points is education. I mean, when one sees what a healthcare professional goes through to get where they are, it's a space where there's no where it's very hard. It's very, very hard to have this mind and body integration in the way that the education system is set up for healthcare professionals. And that's, I think, the first point where we should be looking at. It's like, what's the track for a physician to get where he is or she is? Is it really set up in this holistic health
There you go.
care or not? I mean, I'd say that's the first point to start with, too.
Yeah, addressing the platform of education itself and where they're getting their training. Absolutely.
I mean, and challenges, you asked a little bit about challenges. Definitely, it doesn't rely on only one stakeholder. It's not only on the universities, it's not only on the medical institutions, it's actually like the whole system. So it means patients need also to collaborate to change this. Healthcare professionals, of course, then of course the industry, the healthcare industry also needs to work together to change this. And then governments, insurances, payment systems, they also need to come together to change this reality, let's say.
No, all very good points. Now, as you've seen it, you come from Mexico. And now you're living in Germany, as I understand it. And so you've seen kind of different models of healthcare. Where are you seeing some of the great successes with integrating some of these very techniques you're talking about in Mexico or in Germany? I know this isn't a generalizable experience, but certainly be curious as to what you've observed in your day to day.
I mean, it's very interesting to see, sitting in a global position. It's really, I'd say it's a gift because one gets to see a little bit of the different points of the world. And I'd say they're different points. So, for example, in Germany, it is established from a governmental point of view that all oncology track patients have a psychosocial support. It's just part of the system,
Interesting.
right? And the healthcare system, it's mandatory. I mean, it's just integrated into it. Now, to what extent does that get to the patients, or the patients are aware of this? That's another story. But at least in the system, it's there. And then one looks, for example, to UK, and you see how advanced are they in mental health, where in other countries it's a taboo, right? So there are different points in the different countries which show different points of attention to. Like in the US, of course, there is this focus on the experience of care a bit more, definitely. And how could one offer this, for example, integrative medicine in California, definitely much more developed, right, to other areas. But I think it's a Each one has their own challenges, I would say.
Highly variable at best,
Yes.
right? I was just on another episode interview with someone from the Midwest in Ohio, and we were talking just about the differences, very big differences in terms of how mental health even is perceived and addressed there versus like in California. In California, it feels like everyone has a therapist, and it feels okay, or it's getting, it's at a more accepted rate than it is in the state of Ohio. Although that is changing, we're starting to see a lot of progress and evolution there. And I think that all goes to your point that whether it's in the United States or around the globe, we're seeing those, that variability in terms of the depth of care, the quality of care, and also the acceptance of certain practices that are out there and how those integrate in. Well, that's terrific. I appreciate your insights there. Would you be willing to share with us any of the work that you're doing currently and anything that's getting you really excited and passionate as of late?
I mean, definitely one point which is one of my passions, let's say. I mean, I love what I do. Like, really, my work is my passion as well. It's more of a hobby sometimes.
It's a great
And
place to be, Isabel. Yeah, right.
I know it's just great, right? I mean, it has its downsides because then I get too passionate about it, and then I need to realize, okay, now stop, right? But I mean, this point of affective computing. So how can we bring in stress, emotion detection into the healthcare system and the process of diagnosis and treatment that can help then to get into a more holistic approach to the patient? That's definitely one of my question marks to work further on, right? And one of the other points which I would like to come back to in your comments was how to make it available for people and interesting for people to be open to try and innovate in this area, right? Because I do think that it's just people are the ones who make the difference. If an institution integrates health or not, or it has this integrative approach or not, it's this these minds that are open to try new things and to innovate and to question the status quo, and that is really the key to change, I think, or to move in a different direction.
I so agree with that, and I think it also comes down to breaking down or breaking up the stigmas that affect trying these new modalities of therapy, right? So, when I think of, where I come from in rural America, meditation and all that was seen as sort of a not a good thing. It's weird, right? It's odd, it's strange. As someone who came into this environment and learning from people like yourself, right, who are passionate about it and also bring a lens that really makes it accessible, I started opening up my own mind and my heart to these types of things, and it's changed my own life for the better. And you want to see others benefit from that, right? That from a health perspective, because there's so many beautiful outcomes, even if in your earlier part of the conversation, you were referencing cancer. If it's something terminal and we know it's life-ending, sometimes that final stage, quality of life, increasing that quality of life to the extent that as you exit, you have these opportunities to really reflect, to meditate, to engage with your body and your environment differently than you might otherwise. And so I think the palette of opportunities through integrative care and standard healthcare are immense if we can only find ways to tap people into these unique options that are available to us.
Totally. I totally follow you on that. And I think it's also a topic of making it even accessible language-wise. I mean, I was working with an amazing colleague and very experienced doctor in this sense of trying to make it available in Spanish, for example. So we work together to write this palliative care for children and palliative care for adults. And it's just the knowledge is there in English, right? But it's difficult to make it accessible for people who may not have the access to English or to, so it's this making it accessible to different communities and in different languages. I think that's also one of the points to change in that sense.
Well, thank you for being here today. We are so excited to have you join us and to connect with you, our esteemed alumnus, at Saybrook. So maybe tell the audience a little bit about where they can find you on the interwebs and maybe at Siemens, where they can perhaps follow the work you're doing, because it's pretty awesome, some of the stuff you're into.
Thank you. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn pretty active. I guess that's, I don't know how often, I think Twitter is much often used in the US. I'm not there yet. At some point, maybe I'll be more active. But for now, LinkedIn is one of the places I usually am posting most of the things. And then, and there you can easily get links to the different publications or to different activities that we're doing. And that would be, I'd say, the first point I would recommend, let's say, to go to.
I'm a big fan of LinkedIn, Twitter. We'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile in our show notes. And really, thank you again for taking time out of your day. You're in Germany, so it's super late right now. And really, like 10 o'clock, right? Or 11 o'clock at night, I think.
Yeah, almost 11, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll have to send you some special Saybrook swag as a thank you gift for your late night. Soiree. So thank you.
No, it's really my pleasure. Really my pleasure. And I'm looking forward to connecting further and to seeing more opportunities where we can, paths meet again,
That sounds terrific. Well, thank you, Isabel.